Welcome to episode 76 of the Keith Law Show, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Got a great show today. I speak with Connor Murphy of the band Foxing. They have a great new album out called Draw Down the Moon. We talk quite a bit about the new record, and then just as much, I think, about our shared love of gaming. He and the band are into tabletop gaming, role-playing games, all manner of games, and we talk quite a bit about that in addition to their new album. And you can check them out on tour with Manchester Orchestra starting in the first week of October, although I just found out I'm going to miss them in Philadelphia because I'll be out at the Arizona Fall League. Subscribers to The Athletic can read my latest piece, which is how I would vote on the MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year awards if I had a ballot on any of them. I do not have a ballot. Once again, insert dramatic music here. Now it is my great pleasure to be joined by Connor Murphy of the band Foxing. Their new album, Drawing Down the Moon, came out in July. It is one of my favorite albums so far this year. The title track in particular is a favorite both of mine and of my 15-year-old daughter, which is great. It's always good when we have a song or two in common. And Connor and I are going to talk about the new record and also a little bit about gaming, another thing we have in common. So Connor, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad that we're reaching a youth demographic.
Yes, yes, you got the. There's hope for the future.
I honestly, hearing you say, your 15-year-old daughter, like, it is so exciting to me because there was a period of time where we were making music and we were like, man, feels like only children like this. I'm like, why don't cool adults like this? But as we've gone on, we've been doing this for 10 years, and now we're just like, why don't teenagers like us anymore? It's just geezers at the show. Yeah, so that's great.
I think I am one of the geezers at this point. So I was listening to the album again this morning. In fact, until about 5 minutes ago, I was still listening to the album. And I have to say, I really like the album. And I have such a hard time figuring out kind of what to make of it. Like, I want to say it's ambitious, but it feels like such a cliched term. Also, all your albums kind of sound like that. But it is, I find it a very hard album to pin down in terms of genre, in terms of direction, which made it very hard for me to even think about, like, okay, so how do I ask Connor about the album? I can't even decide what the album is.
Sure. So
how did the album come together? Was there a single vision for the whole record? Because although it all works together, each one of those songs sounds very much like its own kind of animal.
Yeah. It's funny. This is, I talked about the record so much leading up to it coming mm-hmm. out, you know, and then right when it came out, I was doing like a lot of interviews about it. And I felt like I had this kind of like rhythm of like explaining the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we're, I don't know, almost, I think like a month and a half. Mm-hmm. since the release of it, and even in just this amount of time, I've just the way that I've thought about the record has changed so drastically, where now I'm looking back on it and realizing like how it kind of came together, and it's as impressive to me as it is chaotic how how we actually pulled it off, because it was like, you know, we started the kind of what we wanted to do with the record. I had this idea kind of early on that I was watching this show, Joe Parra Talks You to Sleep. It's like an Adult Swim show. Mm-hmm. It's essentially like a meditation thing. And but it's very, very funny. It's this comedian, Joe Parra. Mm-hmm. And at one point in the episode, he talks about Stephen Hawking cheating on his wife. And he says, you know, think of it from Stephen Hawking's perspective. He looks up into the stars all day and thinks about how vast the universe is. So what does it matter if one man cheats on his wife? But then thinking down that same train of thought, if the universe is so vast and you found somebody that loves you, this, you know, small speck that you are, you found another small speck that loves you and trusts you, why would you want to hurt them? And so I called Eric as soon as I saw that, and I was like, I think I want to, this is what I think the record should be about. It's like the vastness of the universe, you know, finding your significance, your cosmic significance by way of like these relationships between yourself and other people and concepts. So that was like the idea that really like sparked the whole thing. But the thing that really obviously threw it all, you know, topsy-turvy was the pandemic and, you know, being locked down and like at a certain point realizing that like we're writing this very like ambitiously positive album and like in our context we're a very sad band that makes sad music, so we're writing like the most positive kind of like you know meditative album in the context of a time, you know, that is so horrible and sad and depressing and makes us so anxious. And I think that's like the nature of the confusion that you have with like, I don't even know how to categorize this album. And it's because of that. It's like the dichotomy of like, we're trying to write something really positive while being like the most scared and depressed that we've ever been. Mm-hmm. And so what kind of happens from that is something that I'm so proud of. I'm so proud of this album. But it is like, when I listen to it now, I'm like, God, we are like, I'm like writing about these things like, you know, I love my girlfriend so much and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But the reality is like, we're just like, we're freaking out so hard the whole time. I'm like writing them, you know, writing the songs and recording the songs, like, you know, distanced and by ourselves at home and all of these things, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, I assume just given when the record came out, knowing that the lag time between sort of when you generally finish the recording and when it actually comes out, were you able to get together for any of this? I assume it was pre-vaccine.
Yeah, so it was all pre-vaccine. We were able to. So, okay, if you remember back in the very, very beginning of, you know, like March 2020, it was like, we don't know how this fucking thing travels. Sorry, can I curse?
Oh, yeah, please. Okay. Curse away.
We don't know how this thing travels. Does it live on surfaces? Is it, you know, how is it transmitted? And so we were just like, nope, nobody goes to the studio. You know, we have like our like a studio in St. Louis, that it was just, you know, it's abandoned, collecting dust for a couple months because we were like, nobody go. So at a certain point it became, you know, testing started becoming a thing and we were like, okay, we can test and we can, you know, two of us meet up and we're still writing songs. At that point, I think by March 2020, we had probably written like, I don't know. I mean, we had probably written like 15 songs, but like maybe like five of them ended up being on the record.
Sure.
So we, when we started being able to test, we kind of started getting together like just for, you know, masks on. Like, be outside, talk about something, like, maybe go in and record a couple things. And then as time went on, it was, like, when testing became more, like, you know, trustworthy or whatever, we were able to, like, at one point we went to Atlanta. After everybody got tested, we worked with the guys in Manchester Orchestra at their studio and all just, like, hunkered down in a place for a week or whatever it was. So in some ways it was like, you know, we started just making our bubble be like the band because we have to like work on this thing.
Right.
But that being said, it was also that whole thing. And it's still kind of the way it is now is like, it's really hard to keep being motivated on that stuff when you're like, yeah, but when do we get to tour? When do we get to actually play the thing? You know, when does the album come out? Like, you know, it's hard to like keep writing and recording something never and watching all of these other people put out amazing records and then just kind of like that's it, they put it out and then they're like, anyway, I guess back to working on another one. I don't know, it's crazy.
Yeah, you haven't gotten to play this record yet. You'll do, it looks like, in about a week and a half or so, maybe less actually. It's almost October, so I guess very soon you will get to play. Well, that'll be the first time you're playing the record.
By this time next week, yeah, we'll be in Texas. But we did play a release show in St. Louis. And then we just played a festival in Toledo. So we've played two shows so far.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really weird. But it's, you know, it's insane. The feeling of, like, playing live again is I don't know. It feels like a weird dream.
Yes. I saw photos from, I've been to a couple of outdoor concerts. I haven't done anything inside yet, although we're vaccinated here. But I saw the photos from Firefly, which is only about an hour from me. We talked about going, but, you know, they pushed it back and we weren't sure about safety. And so we just ended up kind of punting on the whole, despite the fact there were a lot of artists we really wanted to see. And then I saw the shots from Sunday from when Billie Eilish closed. I'm like, that's a lot of people in a very small outdoor space. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. Mm. Like, I could be wrong. I could be irrational. But no, it feels very weird to picture myself there.
I think you're right on the money for, you know, if you're cautious about it. I think some people... I'm at a place now where it's like I'm done like judging anybody for anything with this. It's like it's all like do whatever you gotta do. Like try your best. You know, mm-hmm. I know you're trying your best here. But like, yeah, for somebody like me, I'm like, you know, just being at that festival in Toledo, it was like a small outdoor street festival the band Citizen. It was their like release show festival kind of thing. And there wasn't that many people, and it was all, you know, you had to be vaccinated or have proof of negative tests, all that kind of stuff. It's great. And still, though, it was terrifying the whole time. Just like, you know, just walking to the bathroom. I'm like, I don't know. And then, like, somebody will come up and, like, ask for a picture, and they don't have a mask on. I have mine on, and I'm like, yeah, would you mind like putting a mask on for the picture that way? And then I kind of have already found like the groove of like making a joke out of it. It's like, so nobody has to see our smiles. It'll be great. You can make whatever face you want. You don't even have
to. It's a good line.
Yeah. I'm already going to be saying it over and over and over again. I know.
Yes.
Which actually genuinely is something that I love, is wearing a mask and not having to worry about my smile.
There you go.
That's pretty awesome. No, but it's terrifying, and especially when I see pictures of Lollapalooza or Riot Fest or anything like that, I'm like, I cannot imagine being in that situation. It's just like, you just, you have to assume you got COVID, you know?
You're like, right, you're exposed.
But also, it's like, I get it to a certain extent. It's like, if you love festivals and you haven't gone to one in 2 years, it's like, fuck it. I just want to go. I totally get that mentality. I think I'm a little, I might just not love festivals enough as like a patron of them.
Right.
To like risk everything, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I just went to a convention, a gaming convention, 2 weeks ago. And I could imagine somebody on the other side of this saying, well, yeah, but you were at a convention indoors. And
right.
How would you feel safe doing that? And it's, yeah, I could tell you why I could go. I won't ramble about that, but. Yeah, I did. I actually felt fine. I was nervous going in. And then once I was there, I was like, oh, this is actually okay. Spacing's okay. Everyone's got the masks on. And I kind of got into it also. And I was like, yeah, I really like being here. And maybe that led to a false sense of security. So it's sort of to your point about not overly judging other people. You know, that was my, for some people, it might be an outdoor festival. For me, it was going to that particular indoor event.
It's also what you value. You know, like you value gaming. You want to go to a gaming convention, you know, like, you'll risk more for the thing that you love. You know, like some people love going to church, you know, like, it's not my bag, but like some people, really love church. And it's like, I get it. Like over the course of a year, you're like, I really miss being in, you know, a church, going to mass and like getting communion and stuff. It's like, again, when I see those pictures, it's like, it's terrifying, but I'm also like, I get it. I get where you're coming from with that. I wish you the best. I hope that you're not sick is the biggest thing.
Yes, right? We're not hoping. I might say I wouldn't do that. That's not wishing ill on those people. So,
of course.
Yeah. I just feel like the online dialogue, the tenor of online conversation just leads to, why are you wishing all these people to die? And it's like, no, I want everyone to get vaccinated and be healthy and have a good time.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. I mean, I really hate the whole, like, that whole, like, survival of the fittest Twitter kind of thing of, like, you know, pictures of Lollapalooza and it's like, you know, we're, I don't know, that like all these idiots are going to die kind of thing is like, all right, well, we don't need to go there. Like, it's not really necessary
here. Yeah, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course it did, though. It's Twitter.
Right. Yes, exactly. So I had a couple specific questions on the new record. I won't go track by track because I think it would take 2 hours for me to ask all the questions I have. But, you know, one thing, so the opener, 737, for folks who haven't listened to it, Draw Down the Moon, it's out. It's been out. It was actually the beginning of August. I was a little off on the date there. But so 737 opens up, and it's funny you mentioned working with Manchester Orchestra. I could see the first, you know, two and a half minutes of 737 appearing on their latest album. It's quiet, it's introspective, it's very folky. And then you go like Deaf Heaven Sunbather on us towards the end of the track. And it's like, how do you get to that juxtaposition? Because I'm not a musician, like obviously I'm not a songwriter, but to put those two things together, I'm not saying it's wrong or it doesn't work, but I don't think of putting those two things together or the way that you even shift your, it feels like you're shifting personalities almost. You're in a completely different mood when we get to the second part of the track and still manage to create one cohesive 4-minute whole.
I think that it's just, to me, it's like, that's what I want to do to every song is mm-hmm. just flip it entirely in some way, and you know, the easiest kind of form of that is going quiet to loud. There's like a Bowie quote about the Pixies, where he's saying, you know, what makes the Pixies so good is that their quiets are inaudible and their louds are overpowering. Something like that as a paraphrase. But like, you know, like the, I always really, really love like dynamics in every regard, whether it's again, like literal, you know, quiet and loud, or mm-hmm. whether it's like humorous and dark. You know, anything that is like pushing two opposite things against each other is always so interesting to me. And mm-hmm. I think that I would have loved if we did that even more on our record, like if it was even more just kind of like constant, like we use the term like emotional whiplash a lot, where we're just like, you know, we want someone to feel comfortable with a song and then just get like, you know, hit over the head with a frying pan about it. which I think those are the moments on our record that I'm always proudest of, even if they don't necessarily make like the most, I don't know, like radio friendly song or like commercially successful song. And like, I think that with that song, like what you're asking about with 737, it's like,
yeah.
I think the exact thing that you're saying is interesting about it is also the thing that makes it, like not a successful song, if that makes any sense. Like it's not you can't like make a career out of that,
right.
I guess.
Right. It's not commercial.
Right. But I think in making this record and making some songs that I mean are truly just like we also just very much like pop music and we just wanted to write like songs with verses and choruses. Yeah. In making those though, it's like I think we got to a point where we were like, especially after the record came out, where like Eric and I have been talking and it's like, we just want to make the things that make us proud now. Mm-hmm. So like when we perform 737, it's just so much fun to like really like make that dynamic range happen to like just, go, you know, complete chaos. So it's something that we just want to keep doing over and over again. Like the opening song actually on our previous record, Near My God, the opening song is called Grand Paradise, and it does like mm-hmm. a similar thing where it you know goes wild, and that's like the most fun thing to do live too. So I think that's where it comes from, is just, you know, especially knowing that the thing is going to be so fun to do live, that's like that's what we're always chasing after.
Oh nice. Yeah, I can hear, especially because you go for crescendos where you generally don't go the other direction.
Yeah.
You're not generally going for like, it's a loud, dissonant opening and you head back in the other direction. You'd quiet it down afterwards, which, you know, I would even say like the, it's Where the Lightning Strikes Twice, which is definitely one of the more poppy songs on the album. It's hard to call anything you do truly pop because like you said, I feel like you guys could sit and write the perfect pop song and then you would sit there and you would poke it And it's like, okay, now let's change it. Now let's add other elements. Let's layer things on top of it. And that song has this guitar solo. It's like muscular and like you should be playing an arena and a prog band on top of what is really actually at its heart, but just a really good little pop song.
I agree with you. And I do think like we've written some like just strong pop songs that we just fuck up. We're like, this sounds too pristine. We gotta like mess this up. Eric actually was writing the song Bialystok.
Yes.
And was really like,
love that.
Really wanted to make something that was like a house, a very like house song, like very club kind of like, but not like more so like, I'm trying to think of like the, I don't know, like dark club kind of like Aphex Twin sort of, like Window Licker by Aphex Twin type thing. Okay. That's probably not what he was actually going for, but like that kind of thing of like this dark house, like drum and bass thing. And he was really pulling it off. And then it got to a point where you're like, nah, let's just make this like completely confused and like do all these different things. Let's make like big crash cymbals happen on the chorus. It's just anytime one of us has like an idea where it's like, we're getting going on something that's straightforward and makes sense, the other ones will come in and just be like, nope, let's just make it. Yeah.
It's funny you mention that, because I think that's one of the most successful songs on the record. Ooh. I think Bialystok is great. It's that's one that kind of grabs me in a different way, because it's interesting from the start. It's like, oh, okay, we've got a sort of tonal shift here. And even though in the end, I think there's a pretty good hook at the heart of it, as opposed to like Where the Lightning Strikes Twice or the title track. The title track kind of gets you in pretty quickly. Mm. And then by the time we get to the chorus, it's like, yep, that's a hook. That song is going to... that particular earworm is going to be stuck in my head the rest of the day. And I think that was actually, I don't think that was the first single, but it was the first single I heard from this album about a month or so before it came out. It was like, oh, hey, first of all, it was like, I remember these guys. I remember Nier and My God. You know, it's just like the velocity of music getting released, that the deluge of it means it's, man, if you didn't put an album out in the last 20 minutes, I might've forgotten you. And then this came out. It's like, hey, I like these guys. This last album was good. And so that drew me back in, and it was like, oh, well, maybe we're a little more, I hate to say poppy because it almost sounds derogatory, but
no, I mean, I think it's a fine word. Yeah. Like I really do think that that was, I mean, it was at the root of a lot of things we were doing. It was like, you know, we were constantly just like making things that, you know, a lot of these songs have like the same structure to them, and we for a long time, if you go back to our first album, it's like there's maybe three songs on the album that have like, you know, A, B, A, B, A, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Most of those songs were just like linear structures that are supposed to, you know, like voyages of songs. And it's like, that's cool, but that's also not the kind of music that I usually listen to personally. Mm-hmm. Like I just like verses and choruses so much.
Yeah.
And I like solos. Like it's, and I think there's something about when you repeat a chorus that like, at least on our end, we feel dirty doing it. We're like, what is this? But the reality is like, no, I, that's what I like. I like hearing a chorus and being able to sing along with it. I like when I hear a song for the first time and I know how to sing along with it already, you know, like, it's like most country songs. You're like, by the second chorus, you're like screaming along with it.
Oh, yeah, I got this. Right?
Yeah, exactly. and it's kind of hard to train your brain to do that when you're like, no, it must be confusing and there must be key changes. I don't know.
Well, what you do, though, I don't mean to speak for you here, but I feel like you retain, look, that formula has existed for as long as essentially we've had rock music, because it works, right? Because people like that, and folks like you and me, you're a little younger than I am, but we both grew up listening to that, and so it is appealing to us. I think what you guys do really well, especially on this album, is you say, okay, no, we're going to follow that formula, but we're going to put things, other things into it or on top of it. But at the end of it, at the end of the day, on most of these songs, yeah, there's a chorus, and we'll repeat something, and you can sing along or hum along, and you'll recognize some elements of the melody. And yeah, we're going to get, there'll be a We're going to modulate at some point later on in here, but we've already grabbed you with something that's familiar. And I think it's easier to draw in listeners if they're like, well, some of this is familiar. And then there's something else interesting on top of it. That way you're not purely, like, I try to listen to a lot of more experimental stuff, but often I can say, I respect that. I know it's good. And yes. I'm going to forget it. It doesn't have the hook.
Totally. And there's a lot of experimental music. I mean, there's so much experimental music that I adore that a lot of times, you know, people tell us this about, especially our first two records, is that it's like, it's a whole album listened through. You listen to the whole thing front to back. And I think that is really cool. And I took that as like such a compliment for a long time, but it's also like, kind of to me like a badge of like not necessarily making songs that are like that fun to listen to, you know, like something that isn't necessary, like, because for me it's like some of my favorite artists, it's like I just listen to like one of their songs so much, and I like their whole albums, but I'm like, I come back to one song. It's like back in, you know, when I used to burn mix CDs for my car, it's like I'm putting one Belle and Sebastian song on there and it's gonna be Sleep the Clock Around. It's like, you know, like it's not I'm not putting the whole I'm probably putting the whole record on a different CD, but like
right,
you know what I mean? Like I think for a long time, I'll speak personally because I don't want to speak for anybody else, but like for me it's like I felt insecure about myself as a songwriter. Like, I can't really write like a good hook or like anything like that. So I kind of masked it with like the song has to keep evolving over and over again. You know, like never stay on one thing for too long because that one thing probably isn't that good. And I think it wasn't until I did a solo record that I call Smidley.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I did that where I really like the goal of it was like, I want to see if I'm an okay songwriter by myself. And it really helped me because I was like, you know, even if nobody else likes this, it's like, I like what I just made and I like the hook of this song. So when we went into Near My God and then subsequently Draw Down the Moon, it was like, yeah, I can write something that I enjoy and I think is good. And repeat it over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting that I like that you call it that the song has to keep evolving because that absolutely comes through. And it is something like, I feel like we get more of that type of thing out of bands from the UK right now. I don't think that's like a permanent, you know, that's not like, oh, they're just better at music than we are. I mean, maybe they are, but more that like, they may be more open to it right now. Maybe there's culture. You know, Alt-J was like that on their first album. I think Everything does that really well. I thought before they broke up, Wild Beasts did that really well, where just songs would, hey, there's a hook in there somewhere, but also this song is moving in unexpected ways. And that's, I guess I kind of said this already, but you drew me in with the hook, but you're keeping me in because it's moving in ways I didn't expect it to, or it just keeps becoming more interesting. That's still, to me, that is still very present on the current record on Draw Down the Moon, but I think with more memorable hooks than you had on previous albums, which, whether you intended to or not, to me, I just, you know, not before speaking to you, it's like, well, this just seems like a band that's kind of hitting its stride. They're maturing as songwriters now, and these are just tighter and, you know, have a little more of that pop sensibility, but without losing what made Foxing, which is that your music was interesting and weird and very layered, that you were just putting, hey, we got this good foundation here. Let's put something else on top of it and see how it works. And maybe sometimes it doesn't work, but usually it does.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge compliment. Thank you. I mean, you're like welcome. That, you know, we're so fresh into this album being out, but already very much, you know, discussing like, what do we do next kind of stuff. And it's really that's a big thing, is like giving ourselves enough time, obviously, is a huge part of it. But like also the one thing that we always do is like we kind of try to look back at the wreckage and go like, okay, this past one, Draw Down the Moon, what did, it's not like what worked, you know, in terms of like, what did people like? It's like, what did we actually really like from it? You know, like, what were the, and like, I think that they're, I'm so proud of like all of the songs on the record. I think that like not a single song on there is like a bad song as much as like there are a couple on the record that I would say like there are three songs on the record that to me are like, I think if we kept this mentality just from how we were writing the song, if we kept this mentality and move forward into the next thing, it doesn't matter if the next thing we do is like a metal record or like a, you know, country album or something like that. It's like, if we kind of kept that mentality, I think we'd do really well. Mm-hmm. One of those is 737, just the mentality of like, you know, dynamics and like surprises. The second is the song Cold Blooded. I think that's a song where we really realized early on, like, okay, this is what this song is. You know, like, this is the vibe of the song. And we really just, like, focused on making that vibe as good as it could be. And, like, you know, that I was really proud of how that song ended because we didn't, like, do a bunch of stuff to it to really make it be, like, weirder than it needed to be. It was just, like, it was what it was. And I think that that's a good song. And then the last song of the record, Speak with the Dead, is one where that was the most collaborative song that we had, where everybody was really like responsible for that song. And I think that that's, again, like combining those things. This is me looking back at the record weeks after it came out, but like, but you have to understand I've been sitting with this album for a very, very long time.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure your perspective keeps changing on it.
Yeah, of course. And probably next month I'll be like, you know, actually.
We'll do this again. Yes. Yeah. We'll just come back every month and keep talking about the same album.
Check in on which songs worked and which ones didn't.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So the other big reason I wanted to talk to you was I keep reading in some of the actually articles for years about you guys that you're gamers. Everything mentions Dungeons and Dragons specifically, that you guys like to play that, which I have some familiarity with, although more from playing the computer versions. I was a big Baldur's Gate guy.
Oh, okay, cool. Day.
Yes. So tell me about that. Do you play other games? Are you just role-playing games? Also, isn't there a game that came out with the album? Your publicist just told me about this. I missed it when it came out, but I want to hear about this.
All right, so first off, you hear about Dungeons & Dragons the most because I'm the loudest person in the band. because Eric and John don't do interviews as much as I do. But they both are gamers. They love games. Eric especially is like a PC gamer. Is just a lifelong very into video games, more so than I am. I am way into Dungeons and Dragons specifically. We all play Magic the Gathering.
Yes.
And, you know, we play a lot of tabletops. I think but the other thing is that, like, Dungeons and Dragons is my favorite game of all time. Like, you know, video game and role-playing games and tabletops, all the things, you know, Uno, like all this combined, it's like, I think it's the greatest game ever made. And so I loudly talk about it a lot. The role-playing game that we made with Adam from Lotus Butte, World Champ Gaming is his company. I am so, so crazy about that game. It is, it's really, really cool. We had this like, so Adam is very into, storytelling games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a person, like I'm a dungeon master in D&D, and I am like very, very, I love storytelling, and I love kind of like the improv, like character creation stuff. But more than anything, I love the rules of Dungeons and Dragons and the kind of like, the rolling and the, modifiers that you apply to everything. You know, difficulty checks, that kind of stuff. So it was really, really awesome with working with Adam on it because the idea of the game is that, there's this dying planet, and you and a team have gone to the dying, a moon orbiting the dying planet to like, survive on that moon. And there's a whole lot of backstory to it, but that's like essentially the idea. And it's everybody playing as, you know, it's like a cooperative thing, where everybody is just trying to survive on that moon. So there are, it's a turn-based, thing where you're kind of like, you're orbiting and every orbit is, you know, a counter goes down on the dying planet. You're trying to survive there before the planet dies. And it is crazy. All of the story that Adam especially wrote for this is so, so cool. And mm-hmm. It also sets up enough for you as like playing the game to actually create so much more story to it and lore mm-hmm. for it. And it kind of works in really well with like the whole idea of our album was like, you know, a huge aspect of it was creating this character that isn't necessarily, you know, like I'm on the album cover, but it's supposed to be like, it's a character that mm-hmm. you can apply to anything. So that music video that you saw for Draw Down the Moon.
Yes.
Is Andre DeShields, an amazing Broadway actor, mm-hmm. you know, is playing that character the same way that you play the character when you play the DDTM role-playing game.
Okay.
So anyway, it's very, very cool. And it combines like the, you know, risk assessment rolling stuff mm-hmm. and decision-making that I love about D&D with like a very, very unique storytelling kind of twist to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all cooperative. So it's, I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, I like co-op games. We play, have played. Pre-pandemic, we played a lot of Pandemic in the house.
Oh.
The allure of the game did dull a little bit.
Yeah.
It's still a great game, but it's like, we're living this. Maybe we don't need to actually, right? So, have you played, it's funny you mentioned Magic the Gathering. Have you played any of his other games? Like, I'm thinking, as you're describing the dice modifying too, King of Tokyo is, it's really more of a board game.
Oh, yeah.
Where to me that's so great. I just introduced my 8-year-old to that a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
and she freaking beat me. She like legit beat me. And I'm like, what the hell? I just taught you how to play this. But she very quickly got the hang of how to run down my health points.
Yeah. I just won we just played King of Tokyo with my fiance's brother. And I just won with the most like just risky move ever. It's like it's such a great game where you're just like, you can like risk it all every time if you like stay in Tokyo too long.
Yes,
it's just a wonderful
I was like, especially with two people because it's just here, and I was like one turn from leaving and she rolled. I'm like, oh my god, I'm dead. What the hell just happened?
My fiance bought our brother, the King of Tokyo, like the first, you know, the standard edition.
Yeah.
And he was so crazy about it. So he got like all of the expansion stuff for it.
Oh, and there's so many. Yes.
There's so many. You can spend a wild amount of money on that game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. To me, I love that it is quick to teach. And the fact that there's quite a bit of dice rolling means there's some luck, but also you can do things you can re-roll, you can modify the dice. So it's not like, I just got completely screwed by right? You can build things so that you're not quite as vulnerable to the luck of it. To me, those are the best dice games. Like, I don't want this to just be, it's not craps.
Right.
Where it's just, you roll and you're just done.
You know, that is, it's really interesting. Like, I love modifiers and like rules that kind of build on things, you know, like starting with Magic the Gathering and then like going from there, where it's so much like, all right, all of these cards combined together. How is this going to work if I do like an all out attack on somebody and consider all of their defenses and, you know, all of their modifiers and everything? I love all of that so much. And just like, you know, spending like 10 minutes just on one turn, like, you know, adding everything up. And like, I don't know. Have you ever played the like House of Danger or like that series of.
Is that the Choose Your Own Adventure game? Yeah.
So we got that during, you know, pandemic times, and I was like, we're not still in pandemic times.
I know we are. Right? We should be playing more games, clearly.
Yes. So we got that one, though, and that was like actually a huge thing that we were talking about during making the DDTM role playing game, because it does the same thing where you're doing the modifier stuff, but it's also like it's a story that's like unfolding in front of you. I love that so much. I love when there is a story. Like, that's the one thing about, like, King of Tokyo that I'm like, you know, oh, I wish there was some more, like, backstory to this. But you can look up those characters and see, like, you know.
Yeah.
The backstory for them, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's your game of choice? Like, what would you say is the greatest video game, all games combined? Do you have one standout that you're like, this is the greatest game ever made?
The one I like, I do rankings constantly because people love to read rankings, and the one I say is the tops is Seven Wonders, which is I don't know if you played it, but it's a board game of primarily of cards,
right?
And what's great is that it plays fast because you're doing most of your decisions at the same time.
Yeah.
So you get like some meat. There's some complexity. There's a lot of decisions going on, but it's fast. And also, I like the fact that when there's a game where, you know, you have to draw a card, pick which card you're going to keep, and then pass to the left or pass to the right. Well, when everyone else is no one wants to be that person who's sitting there holding up the whole works, right?
Of course.
So to me,
unless you're a psychopath and you're like, that's what I love.
Yes. Or my sister, who's an accountant by training, and definitely she's like, I'm building a spreadsheet in my head. Stop bothering. But those, like, to me, that's one of the all-time greatest. You just need more players. Like, it works with three, okay, but the more you get, the better. I've played it with seven, and it's a riot at that point. Like, it's really funny, and it's like, did you take my card? Or you also have the choice where it's like, well, wait, I'm not going to see any of these cards again, so I better choose something right now. And so many other games have tried to mimic that, that mechanic. So to me, that's also the mark of a good game. When other games are copying you, it's the ultimate compliment.
Totally.
So that's
yeah, that's a good choice. That's like, I love anything that's like deck builder or deck builder adjacent.
Yeah.
Especially because it's like level playing field. You know, that's the one thing I hate about Magic the Gathering is that it's like, it's, you know, it's just whose deck is better, you know, like who spent more money kind of thing, which is like, you know, I just read this really, really great book called Of Dice and Men. That
sounds right up my alley.
Oh, you'd love it. It's really, really good. It's the history of D&D and of like the, you know, essentially it's a lot of it's, you know, about Gary Gygax and the early days of D&D, but it's also like it's a like a personal story about you know, the author kind of growing up being ashamed of his love of D&D, and then like, you know, a nerd revival kind of thing, making him come out of his shell.
Right.
But like, a huge part of it is that towards the end of, you know, the Gygax era is like Wizards of the Coast coming in, having made Magic the Gathering. And they're like, we just made the perfect business model of, you know, constantly putting out new cards that are, you know, it's like that they're like the first real, like, trading card game,
right?
Where it's competitive, it's not baseball cards,
right?
It's so cool. But anything that's like a deck builder in the moment, or like a card drawing in the moment, where everybody's on the same playing field and you're just like, how good are you at, you know, in the moment strategizing, is very, very, very cool to me.
Yeah, I like that. Like, I like Dominion.
Dominion's
great deck builder. Yeah. And then the variety, like everyone has access to the same stuff. So whatever particular, you know, there's like 80 expansions now. I own two. Like that's enough, right? That's enough cards, but you have other games. And to now I still see so many, I know they weren't the original, but they definitely sort of set down like this is kind of the optimal deck way of playing a deck building game. The draw five, play them all, discard. I see so many other games. There was one this summer that I played with two of my daughters, the two who are old enough to, the youngest doesn't read yet, but called Summer Camp, which was only I found it at Target. I'm like, how the hell have I not heard of this game? I do this, like, I'm supposed to know all this stuff. And it was like, it was a little bit of Dominion for kids. It was like very, very lightweight Dominion with a little bit. You had meeples to move on a track too. That was good. But that, at heart, it was just a really simple deck builder that I could explain to the 8-year-old and she could grasp right away. And then my 15-year-old's played a bunch of these before, so we knew what was going. Like, there's something really very satisfying about that.
Totally.
Where, you know, you, I know going in what this, what the skeleton of the game is, and now it's just, all right, this is interesting because of the cards or because you've added this one extra element on top of it. But the comfort and like, we, hey, we know this works. This has been around for 10 plus years. We know how these games go and we know that they're, that they work well.
Yeah. I mean, I think like Munchkin is like a, obviously like great kind of example of how you can like build an entire franchise around just like a, the simple idea of like, you know, like a card drawing, everybody's on the same kind of, I don't know. It's also like, it's such a simple game to pick up and start playing. It's like you can play, you can be a dummy and really just like get into it and be like, this is the greatest game ever made.
Yeah. I love that. The games with the quick, it, if it's got a, you know, quick learning, short learning curve, can I teach you in 5 minutes? You know, Ticket to Ride is one of those, like, I get it. Lots of people will tell you there's way better games out there that do the same thing, but I can teach you Ticket to Ride in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you can play and you can be competitive. That's worth a lot, especially when I'm talking to my readers about games. Like, they're not all gamers. That's my job.
Yeah. Well, like, my, you know, our big COVID thing was our best friends moved next door to us.
Oh, very nice.
And they are, Phil, our one of our neighbors, is like just massively into tabletop games, and
he's my new best friend.
Yeah
No offense.
It's okay, he's cooler. he has so many games, and like he loves, and he's the type of person that buys a game and then immediately opens it up and figures out how to play it entirely and plays it, you know, on his own, and then is like, please play this game with me. And a lot of times it's like, It's like the first thing that I'm going to ask him is like, how long is it going to take to like, you know, learn this game? Like, is this going to be like an all night? By the end of the night, we're going to know how to play it, or are we going to have played it a bunch of times? And that's to me like the mark of a really great game is one where you can like one person knows how to play it and everybody is like intuitively learning it really quickly. You know, that's the coolest thing. Like, I think it's called Bang. Bang is like one that it's always like a, you know, he loves like those kind of like dice centric games, and it's always just like a, how long is this going to take? It's like literally you already know how to play it.
You know how to play, right? when I travel to like, not travel, but like we're going to friends' houses or there's a party somewhere. Especially if I know one or two people there might be like, hey, did you bring any games? I'll always throw in like Love Letter or One Night Werewolf.
Oh, yeah. Love Letter is perfect. Yeah.
It's perfect, right? The way to play the game is on the cards.
Yes.
You draw one card and it's like, oh, here's what I do. Okay. Well, you draw, you know, you have two cards, whatever. You have to pick one, but everything is right there for you. The One Night Werewolf game is kind of the same. Like, you just play the thing on your phone, it tells you what to do. So the strategy is, like, you just pick it up as you go. I don't really have to explain anything. And it's great when you're in, like, a crowd of people you don't know, or some people are like, I don't do games. I'm like, you'll like this one because it's going to make you laugh, or it's going to get people yelling at each other, which games like that are perfect. I don't need to explain a whole lot. I love a good crunchy, you know, hour and a half tabletop game, but you got to know your audience. Not everybody's into that stuff. Most people aren't into that stuff, but that's fine. That's more for us.
Totally. I still haven't played One Night Werewolf, but we're, you know, massively into Werewolf over here. Yeah. I just got my family to play.
Oh, nice.
For like on Father's Day. And it was so wild. I love it so much. Like I hate more than anything in the world, like just being a werewolf. I hate lying. but like, and that's why I'm always like, I'll be the narrator. Because it is the most fun thing in the world to watch like your mother lie, or like, you know, like, I wonder, am I noticing anything about you lying right now that I've like from when I was a child, like picking up on that?
Right.
It's so cool. I think, you know, Werewolf is one of my favorite games ever made.
My niece,
that specific thing.
My niece was 6 or maybe 7 when we first introduced her to that game. I think she'd seen the rest of us playing and she wanted to try it. And we're like, okay, humor the kid, right? And so we play one time, and at the end, she flips over the card. She doesn't even change her expression, flips over the card. She was a werewolf the whole time. She lied through her teeth the entire time. We're dying. We're like, you are, like, where did you learn to lie like that? I look at my sister. I'm like, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You got no shot when this kid's a teenager.
So I think it was the first time I ever played it was Modern Baseball. Are you familiar with Modern Baseball? We did a tour with them. It was a massive, so many bands on this tour. It was 5 bands. It was Somos, Crying, Knuckle Puck, Us, Modern Baseball.
Oh, wow.
So many people. And Modern Baseball bought everybody a hotel when we were in Denver, which is unbelievably nice of them. Mm. And they're like, the one condition is we all have to play werewolf. So it's like, you know, so many people in this giant circle. And of course, I get a werewolf card. And we won. But part of it was I was sitting next to Zorb from Crying. And they were the whole time so convinced that I was like with them. And I was like, you know, part, and they kept going like, I know, okay, the one thing is I know that Connor's not a werewolf. And I was like, thank you. And then, you know, as it went on, it was like they looked me in the eye and they're like, you're not a werewolf. And I was like, no, I swear to you, I'm not. And then it's like the second it was over, I was just like, I am so, so sorry. Like, I know that you hate me now. I know that this is translated way beyond a game and that you have now, I just lied to your face. I swore. It's rough. That's really rough.
That's amazing. This is why we love these games, right? I love that that's what comes. Like, it's the laughing, the stories afterwards. We have so many in jokes now with family, friends about a certain time we played Werewolf or we played Just One or Love Letter, any of those.
Yeah.
There's lots of reasons why I love these games, but that's one of them. The fact that we could talk music for a half hour and we could talk games for almost a half hour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is great. My guest today has been Connor Murphy of the band Foxing. Their new album, Draw Down the Moon, came out on August 6th. I highly recommend you check it out, and they will be hitting the road the first week of October. You're doing at least some dates with Manchester Orchestra?
All of them.
Is that correct? All of them. Outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be a great show. I love their new album, too, actually.
Have you been following the Cardinals thing?
The fact they haven't lost in like a year and a half? Oh, you're a Cardinals fan.
I mean, I live in St. Louis.
Best fans in baseball. I'll allow it.
They are right now at the recording of this 17 games in to their streak.
It is incredible. The one big bit of excitement we've had in a season where it seemed like most of the playoff spots were kind of locked up and the Cardinals were like the Kool-Aid guy, right? Through the wall, right? I am very grateful for them. For giving us some excitement at the end of the year. And I'm not even a Cardinals fan.
Yep. That was
excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Connor, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, thank you so, so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It was very fun to talk to you about these things.
Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe. Go get that vaccine.
Bye.